Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, manufacturers of commercial tools, equipment, and systems for greenhouse and nursery professionals for over 80 years. More information is at dramm.com.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, going to talk about the nutritional benefits of fortified beverages. Sue Nitzke, professor and UW Extension nutritional scientist, our guest today. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along, we welcome them. Have you got one of those favorite fortified drinks that you like to drink, or maybe you have questions about them? Certainly call us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Sue Nitzke, welcome back.
Good to be here, Larry.
Lots of these products on the market now. I've noticed water with calcium fortification in it. I think 7-Up has got one with some calcium fortification, and there are many, many others.
It's amazing. If you just go to the supermarket and look at how much shelf space these days is devoted to beverages with some sort of enhancement, It's just amazing. One of the statistics I saw in getting ready for the show was that these products that have, quote, increased energy, like Red Bull and those other things,
right.
Were a $3 billion industry in 2005.
Wow.
I mean, $3 billion, that's a few bucks, and it's just growing phenomenally. So I really want your listeners, Larry, to think, okay, what do I expect from my beverages? What am I drinking? What do I want to be drinking? Does this make sense for what I'm thinking about, or am I falling prey to marketing, which, as you know, is very powerful these days?
Well, Coca-Cola and Nestle claim that their green tea flavored and Vega burns more calories than it provides, resulting in negative calories. You know, we got zero calories out there. Now they're claiming negative. And they had some unpublished Swiss study to back this up.
Well, I think the study is now published.
No, it is.
Yes. And I actually asked one of our metabolism experts from our department to look at the study with me and help me kind of understand what they really did and what they really found. This was a study in Europe, and they took 31 people. These were not obese or overweight people, but 31 healthy people, men and women. And they gave them a mixture of this thing called EGCG. Supposed to be one of the active ingredients, epigallocatechin gallate.
Oh, boy.
You can see why they call it EGCG. And 300 milligrams of caffeine. And that's pretty much the same as what you get from a serving of Inviga.
Okay.
And they gave them this beverage for 3 days, and they did very sophisticated measurements of the energy out part of the energy balance equation. You know, we take in energy from the food we eat, and we use energy for just running our bodies as fuel for our bodies to get through the day and for exercise and for digesting our food, et cetera. And they found somewhere around 100 calories more burned per day during this three-day period when people were getting this caffeine EGCG mixture. And so, like, whoa, okay, that's cool. And so it was, like, amazingly fast that a beverage was made with the same combination of caffeine and EGCG and a couple of other things. They put some calcium in there and, I don't know, a couple other non-interesting ingredients and three flavors. And I bought some over the weekend and brought some in for us to taste.
Yeah.
So, and I also want people to understand this was a three-day study. Nobody knows if you drank three cans of this stuff a day, which is what they're recommending to get that 100 calorie a day metabolism boost. Nobody knows if a week, a month, a year, if you did this for a long time, if that would fizzle out or not. I suspect it's probably not as wonderful as it sounds off of the top of, you know, when you just sound like, oh, wow, 100 calories a day. That could really help in weight loss. One of the things our metabolism expert, Dale Scheller, pointed out to me when we were going through the study, and these are his words, because weight loss from caffeine, which the study actually pointed out that the reason for the weight loss might not be this fancy green tea extract EGCG thing. It might just be from the caffeine. But either way, it's not accompanied by the usual health benefits like lower glucose and lower blood lipids. So if you lose weight with diet and exercise, you're more likely to have the health benefits of that weight loss more strongly than you are from relying on products with lots of caffeine and that sort of thing to, quote, boost your metabolism. And that's in addition to the concern of, you know, if you have all this caffeine all day, every day, what's that doing to how productive you are, how jittery you are, how some people are kind of hyperreactors to caffeine. And all of us develop some kind of a minor physical dependence on caffeine so that we'll get a headache if we don't have caffeine after long periods of time. How does this fit with the other beverages you're taking in if you're a coffee drinker or a person who uses lots of colas or Mountain Dew or something like that? So it gets complicated in a hurry, and we'll have a chance hopefully to sort through some of those issues.
What does it taste like?
Well, I brought the peach flavor today.
All right.
And I honestly have not tasted it before. It comes in three flavors. One of them is more the green tea flavor, and I honestly forgot what the other flavor is. It's berry or something.
Well, bottoms up. Let's give it a try.
Okay, here we go.
Well, refreshing enough, I guess.
Yeah, I think it has artificial sweeteners in there. And I think some people can pick up those flavors more than others, but it's carbonated and it's refreshing. It's over $1 a can. And if you actually do what they say in drinking three cans a day to get this,
that's 90 bucks a month.
it amounts to $100 to $300 per pound lost. And I did some more calculations and figured out that you could easily spend $1,500 a year on this product. And I'd rather have you take that $1,500 and join that gym that you've been thinking about going to every day, or doing something that'll actually get you to the gym or out walking or whatever it is that you need to do to, boost your metabolism the healthy way.
Sue Nitzke, UW Extension nutritional scientist, our guest as we talk fortified beverages with her today. Join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to Cindy in Menasha. Cindy, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Okay, well, actually, I just started drinking this fortified beverage that I bought at the dollar store or the Dollar Tree, and it's called Rip It. And it's a citrus drink, and I notice it has a lot of B vitamins, like B6, B12. And it does have caffeine, but, 100 milligrams of caffeine, and I'm not sure how much that compares to, like, a cup of coffee. But I notice that it really does seem to give me an energy boost that lasts through the day. And I'm always, like, lacking in energy, and just it's really hard for me to get going and things like that. And just one a day seems to really help me, and I'm wondering if, is that just like a, am I just thinking it's helping me because you know what I mean?
I have a chart with me that shows the caffeine content of different products, and Rip It happens to be on my chart. I've not tried it myself. But it's pretty comparable to many of these other drinks, and not very far from what you'd get from a strong cup of coffee.
Okay.
Do you drink coffee and other things with caffeine in them?
Well, I do, but I just have like two cups of coffee in the morning, and that's all I have for the whole day because I notice I will get jittery if I drink too much coffee. But with this, even with that coffee in the morning, if I have this like while I'm drinking one right now, and it doesn't seem to bother me. I don't seem to get the jitters. I just seem to get the good, like the energy from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things might be timing. Do you have breakfast in the morning?
I usually do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because one of the things with many substances, the effect on your body can be tempered by consuming them with a meal. In other words, even like, you know, people with lactose intolerance, it's a condition where the sugar in milk can give you diarrhea or gas. If you have that lactose on an empty stomach, it's much more likely to affect you than if it is if you have that same amount of lactose in, let's say, whole milk, where there's other calories there to slow things down, or if you have it with your breakfast cereal, let's say. So that the digestion process would be slower.
Okay.
And just the timing of your caffeine intake in relation to how full your stomach is and how much, you know, fat and protein and, you know, things that kind of slow down your digestion are going on. It's really hard to make a general statement, but I will say that caffeine is pretty much caffeine. And whether it comes from a sparkling drink or your coffee, I've looked at a lot of studies, and I haven't seen anything that suggests that it makes a whole lot of difference whether it comes from one kind of beverage or not, or another.
Or another. Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and can I ask how much this product costs? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. It's $1 a can, and I just have one can a day.
Yeah. You know, I don't. $1 a can, if you like a can a day and it doesn't bother you to spend $1 a can, go for it. But I would like the listeners to think about how easily and quickly that adds up.
Yeah.
And, you know, with like with this Inviga product, they're, I don't know if it's a marketing gimmick or not, but they recommend 3 cans a day. So, you know, that really adds up to money in a hurry. And, you know, these days, there's lots of other things you could do with that money, and maybe this is the one that feels best to you, maybe it isn't, but I do want you to be kind of aware of that. Is this product artificially sweetened, or does it have regular sugar in it?
Well, you have you can get both kinds, and I try to get the the artificial sweetener because I'm a diabetic.
Okay.
But it really, I don't know, it just seems like it really helps me through the day with energy, and I'm able to exercise more because of it.
Yeah.
But the only thing is, I'm just wondering, would I get the same benefits if I just took vitamin supplements that have the B vitamins?
And oh, you know, I'm so glad you asked that. I am so annoyed by all these claims on these products that, you know, vitamin waters and sports waters, and they've got this B vitamin and that B vitamin. You know, have a piece of toast, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's just silly. You don't need to get your vitamins from water or beverages, because they're normally present in the food that we eat every day. And those B vitamins, if you have anywhere near a balanced diet, if you have something from every food group every day, you don't need to try to, you know, once you get enough, having more of them isn't going to do any good. It's, you know, the old phrase, it just makes you have expensive urine. And so I don't think you're actually getting any benefit from those other vitamins that they added. That's a feel-good kind of marketing gimmick. And if you're diabetic, it never hurts to just have a little chat with your physician about the kinds of other products that you're using. I'd like you to look. Do you have a can nearby?
Yes, I do.
Would you look at the facts panel, and it would say either nutrition facts or supplement facts. Which does it say?
Supplement facts.
Yeah. I'd like everyone listening to, when they buy these products, just kind of turn the can around and see, is it a nutrition facts panel or a supplement facts panel? And the reason I'm saying that is because many of these products are marketed as supplements. For instance, I brought one with me. It's called AMP or something like that. And it has a supplement facts panel instead of a nutrition facts panel. Mm-hmm. And that really is the signal to the Food and Drug Administration about which kind of product this is. Food is required to have a nutrition facts panel, food and beverages in the normal sense of the word. Things that are marketed as supplements, as you probably are well aware, it's a buyer beware. Unless there's bodies in the street, the Food and Drug Administration is not going to pay much attention to them. Nobody has to prove they're safe. Nobody has to prove they're effective. They can't really tell bold-faced lies, but anything up to that is fair game, and nobody, the law is written such that supplement marketing is pretty much the wild, wild west. So any product marketed with a little information panel on the back that says supplement facts instead of nutrition facts, to me that's a buyer beware. You may or may not be getting the benefits that are claimed in the marketing literature, et cetera, et cetera. It's, you know, it's not necessarily untrue, but it's also not necessarily true.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Cindy. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the nutritional benefits of fortified beverages with Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. You drink one of those? Question about it? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to John in Minocqua next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I'm just sitting here off the side of Route 51, so I won't endanger somebody. We could go on the whole program about those nutritional supplements. Do you have that can in front of you?
We do.
What does it say for the artificial sweeteners? Does it actually say which ones they are?
Yeah, it has two of them. It has acesulfame K and aspartame.
Okay. Are you aware of aspartame as an ant killer?
Actually, it's not an ant killer. There is so much information available about artificial sweeteners over the internet, and I'll honestly say that 90% of what I see being shared by people going, did you know this about, is just baloney.
Aspartame is not
I hate to burst your bubble there, John, in Minocqua, but it's not an ant killer. It's been studied about as much as anything in our food supply has been studied. And, you know, you don't have to drink it if you don't want to. But all these scares about all the things that aspartame is going to do to you, I just don't have any science behind them.
Sure, be happy to provide you with the science behind it if you'd be so inclined.
Well, you mean right now, or you're going to send me something?
You can send Sue something, and we'd be happy to take a look at it. Just send it to me at the radio station here. Just write to me, Larry Mueller at, just put WPR, 1850 University Avenue in Madison. The zip is 53706, and we would be happy to forward that on to Sue Nitzke. Thanks for calling. Dawn in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? I'm on a cell phone.
Yes.
Okay. I'm a physical therapist. I do home health, and I have a elderly patient that was using Boost as a nutritional supplement, and then her daughter bought her SlimFast. I don't know if it was because it was cheaper or why, but she had asked me if she was afraid that it was going to suppress her appetite and that she wouldn't be able to eat if she took the SlimFast instead of the Boost. And so I was wondering what you thought of that, if SlimFast could be used as a nutritional supplement similar to Boost, or if she should be using the Boost instead.
Well, I think you should be talking to, is she under medical care with a normal physician?
Yes.
Yeah. This is, if she has different conditions, like perhaps she has diabetes or liver disease or you know, I don't want to get into a medical discussion, but the physician and the dietitian who works with that physician should really talk about what's the best product for this person. It gets quite complicated.
They started doing it on their own more than through the doctor, but
Well, you know, I'm one of the planners of a conference we have here in Madison every year. It's for nutrition and aging, and people from all over the state, many of the dietitians and the people who work in community care facilities come. And one of our sessions this year is about supplemental products like Boost or Ensure, whatever those, you know, we could list 100 Slim brand fast. Names probably, and the different indications for which one is better and what you should be careful of and that sort of thing. It really depends on what you're looking for. The potential of interfering with appetite is there, and that's as much of a timing issue as choosing your product wisely.
Mm.
You know, usually you try to stay at least an hour away from any mealtime, and at a time when the person is likely to be hungry in between meals, like an afternoon snack kind of thing. But you're right, if you have it right before a meal, no matter if it's Slim Fast or something else, I mean, it would be likely to reduce the person's appetite.
Mm.
And one of the things that I heard as a recommendation once is that just go for the cheapest product, like instant breakfast type mm-hmm. things, if all you're trying to do is get a little extra calories per day in a kind of a balanced formulation. I'd also like you to think about whether something like some real food might fit the bill. Maybe some applesauce or a bowl of cereal or, you know, whatever is enjoyable. There's no reason it has to be liquid and out of a can to have that same benefit. And I think in today's society, we tend to think of, because some formulation was developed by a bunch of chemists and marketers, that that's got to be better than what we can just go buy in the grocery store. But a banana might just fit the bill really well and have those nutrients the way they were put there by Mother Nature.
All right, let's go to Chris in Poinette next. Chris, hello to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling actually in reference to protein supplement beverages that are out there on the market. And mm-hmm. as you all know, the library is exponential at best as far as how many are available and what is out there and what they profess to do or not do for the consumer. But I do quite a bit of physical training. I'm involved in a field that involves me doing a lot of teaching and training on a physical level. So I have been actually working with a physical trainer who had recommended various types of protein beverages or protein powders that you can add to water or milk or what have you. Again, as you had mentioned earlier, the problem I'm finding is that there's really any definitive manual or reference book of any sort to find out whether there are any on the market that indeed are what they profess to be, or if it is the roulette wheel of trying to figure out what is better and what isn't just based on what they say, since it is considered still a supplement as opposed to a food product.
Yeah.
I think you identified the critical phrase there. They're marketed as supplements. They don't have to prove they have benefits. If you're eating a normal diet, meaning you have some sort of dairy products or meat or beans or peanut butter or whatever it is that provides protein, with some very rare exceptions, important exceptions for specific types of sports, you just don't need these powders or supplements. The gym that I go to, when you walk in the door, you have to swipe your little card to show them who's there, and then you almost have to evade this counter with all these, you know, big buckets of whey protein powders that they sell. And I'm like, oh, gee. It's just silly. Get your protein from food. Just like I told the last caller, have a banana instead of the supplement products. It's just that it'll do just as well. And unless you're really in a highly competitive sport that just relies very heavily on a specific type of muscle development, the protein from your food is very adequate, and you don't need to use those powders, and you could save yourself some money for a nice, good pair of athletic shoes.
That's good. I guess to add on to that very quickly, though, there are sections of the year where I actually am involved where it's very competitive, and there is a demand for increased musculature for 6 months out of the year or something like that. And obviously, I've shied and ran away from any of the illegal supplements and in many of the ones that are you can find at many of the health food stores. But is there any suggestion that you have in regards to, aside from boosting my chicken breast and salmon and red meat intake, any other additional protein or type of supplementation that can be used?
Mm.
Do you like to drink milk?
Well, my body is not happy with milk many times, so I've kind of shied away from drinking dairy and get my calcium elsewhere, and I usually tend to consume rice milk more than anything else.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, rice milk isn't going to give you much unless it's fortified with something, as if you're looking for a protein beverage.
Right. I usually even drinking, you know, just take calcium supplements on top of that.
So. Right. So, you know, the other sources of protein in your diet, the beans or peanut butter or meat or cheese or whatever you get your protein from, just have an extra serving per day would be just fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You know, for a lot of people, it's just plain easier to go to a can of something or...
Well, and, you know, that's a good point, Larry. I'm not trying to convey the idea that these products are going to hurt you. Maybe products with a whole lot of caffeine or other things that don't sound like caffeine but really are caffeine, like guarana or yerba mate or methyl xanthines, you know. Marketers keep track of what people are afraid of and find other ways to promote them. I get so annoyed when I buy products and I look at the ingredient list and I see that a product contains evaporated cane juice. And I'm like, okay, that sounds way better for you than sugar, but it's sugar.
Sugar, yeah.
You know, where does sugar come from? Cane. Mm-hmm. Evaporate the juice and what do you have? Sugar. Hello. And some of these guaranas and other things are, they don't sound like caffeine, but that's the active ingredient, and it's another way of getting it in there without sounding so scary and maybe sounding like it's worth a little more money. So the herbal ingredients may or may not have any benefits, and in some cases where they do actually provide lots of an ingredient like caffeine that you might not realize that you're getting too much of over the course of the day, there could be some effects that you should at least be aware of if they're not always harmful. So I really just want your listeners to pay attention. Studies show that in this country, we get about a fifth of our calories from beverages. I mean, just think of that. Over the course of the day, especially people who drink soft drinks that are sweetened with sugar or in the case of many of these sports drinks, they're sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, just like Coke and Pepsi are. And those can really add up to a lot of calories over the course of the day. One third at least of our added sugar intake in this country comes from soft drinks. And to me, this is an easy place to look at, do I really want to have a soft drink? Or can I get away with having some water out of the tap? Or just some fruit juice or some low-fat milk or something that is just as satisfying and quenching your thirst and providing a few natural nutrients in the case of the fruit juice or milk. And we don't always have to go to a highly colored marketed beverage to get those benefits.
Thanks again, Chris. Margaret in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hello there. I enjoyed listening to the program. I just wanted to kind of ask you about my son, who's 2 years old. He is allergic to dairy and all nuts. And for drink, we've been giving him Silk soy milk. We used to go with the kids' variety, which was high in sugar. It had 18 grams per serving. And then they just came out with a Silk soy milk plus variety, which is kind of marketed for the omega-3 DHA aspect, which is geared towards adults, and is significantly less in sugar. It has 6 grams per serving. And they both have the same percentage of the variety of supplements. And I just wanted to, I don't know if it's supplements, but nutrition facts in terms of like vitamin A, calcium, vitamin D, vitamin E, riboflavin, and more than the typical soy milk amounts. And I just, if these are beneficial or...
Okay. Yeah, you're kind of breaking up a little bit, Margaret. So
yeah, but we get the gist of your question. For adults and children who, for a specific reason, I have to stay away from regular milk. Soy milk is a fine substitute. It's not totally automatically a source of all of the same nutrients, but especially if it's calcium fortified, which and has some vitamin D in it, that's the first thing you should look for. Make sure it's fortified with calcium and vitamin D. It's usually an okay substitute for regular milk. And for young children, looking for the lower sugar versions, I think, is very important. You know, children develop a taste for how sweet things are and you know, becomes a habit. So there's no reason to give young children beverages with lots of added sugar or a high fructose corn syrup, which is basically the same as sugar. Mm. So, I think Margaret in Brookfield is thinking about the right kinds of things, and it sounds like she's working with her child's allergy in a way that makes sense. And always, of course, speak with your allergist and the dietitian who works with that allergist to make sure that the overall diet is balanced.
Thanks, Margaret. Appreciate your call. Ed in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Sue, I have two... I'm addicted to two things. One is ginger ale, and the other one is just hot cocoa mix. And I remember the glycogenolysis cycle from I took a course on campus from a Dr. Henninger back in 1963. Uh-huh. But the two, you know, the ginger ale contains a fructose corn syrup, mm-hmm. and the cocoa just contains 12 grams of sugar. Mm-hmm. I can have like four packages of that hot chocolate, and I won't be affected, but I can just have a half a cup of the ginger ale with fructose corn syrup, and I develop when I try to use my right hand, I get like a muscle tetany. And is there any difference how we metabolize the fructose compared to the sugar?
They should be very similar. Ginger ale is a pretty simple beverage. It doesn't have caffeine added in most of the brands, at least, and it's pretty much flavored sugar water with mm-hmm. some carbonation. So I don't know any reason why it should affect you any different than other products with sugar. And whether it's sugar or high fructose corn syrup really shouldn't make any difference. If you're concerned, I think you should talk to a physician, but what you've described doesn't trigger anything that I could think of as an explanation.
Hmm.
I might point out, if you're not averse to artificially sweetened products, if you have several servings a day of a ginger ale or hot cocoa or whatever the sweet beverage is, you might think of one having the most dilute form that you would still enjoy. With a carbonated beverage, that's a little tricky because the more water you put in, the more you know, you lose the fizz. Or use an artificially sweetened form so that you don't get quite so many calories. If weight is at all a concern for you.
Yeah, the thing that bugs me though is the like I can have, you know, at least four of the Nestle's and it doesn't bother me at all. You know, high cocoa mix, but I, you know, just add a small quantity of that ginger ale does. But
well,
anyway.
I suspect then you should talk to someone about whether you might have an allergy to ginger. I mean, you know, they're
good idea.
The ginger flavoring is the unique component of that beverage, more than the high fructose corn syrup, which you get in lots of products these days.
Yep.
So you might just check that out with an allergist, and or even do a kind of a blind test with. Have some friend try to give you something with and without ginger in something strong flavored where you can't really tell it's there, and then see if you react the same way. You know, our expectations are just so important in how we actually react to foods and beverages that whatever you can do to kind of cancel out that factor gives you a lot more information.
Okay, thanks for the program.
Yeah,
you're
thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Larry, are we going to taste this other thing I brought?
Yeah, let me give the number again first, and then let's taste. 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. And you brought something else that you kind of like, made by Minute Maid.
Right. I mean, Minute Maid is a division of Coca-Cola, so I'm not certainly trying to promote this particular beverage. But I thought, you know, it's marketed as a light fruit drink. It has 3% fruit juice, so it's like not a huge source of fruit juice. But it does contain more of the sweetening power from fruit extracts, like grape juice and that sort of thing. And it also is artificially sweetened, so people who want to stay away from artificial sweeteners might not enjoy it. But it's fizzy, and it has that kind of sweet flavor and fruity taste, and a lot fewer calories, and I think a more reasonable price than some of the other products that that Larry and I are looking at up here on the counter that cost, you know, $1 to $2 a can.
And this is
this particular one is called Light Cherry Limeade, but it comes in lots of different flavors. They have on a guava and all kinds of kind of tropical sounding mixtures.
It's good.
And it's just as refreshing. So
yeah, it's very good.
It might be for people that don't want to just drink water. It's way too boring. They might, you know, keep looking around on the shelves and see if there aren't some products there that might fit your needs better.
Tasty. Gigi in Viroqua, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to know about when somebody doesn't eat for a long time and they get, is it hypoglycemia?
Uh-huh.
And then, well, it's happened to me. And then I get so hungry that nothing is appealing. You know, they say, well, have a banana or have a piece of toast. And it's like, I can't eat. I'm too hungry to eat. And is that just me or is that common to people?
Well, actually, if people who go on the very, very, very strict low-carbohydrate diets can sometimes experience a similar factor. And it has to do with your body's adjustment to starvation, basically, and mobilizing some of the fat in your body to provide energy. Your brain needs glucose or carbohydrate for energy, and if you're not taking any in because you're not eating at all or because you're just eating things that don't have any carbohydrate in them at all, then your body kind of shifts its system of getting energy from food and providing energy for your brain. And some people report that that makes them feel not hungry, and it's one of the reasons why that first induction phase of things like the Atkins diet seem to help people lose a lot of weight in a hurry. One is that they have to excrete a lot more, so they urinate more and they dehydrate themselves, which you know causes weight loss, which isn't recommended. But the other is that they tend to lose their appetite for a while and maybe just not eat as many calories as they would have if they weren't doing that. If you have any kind of liver condition or diabetes, or if you're pregnant, or you know you're a young growing child, or there's a long list of people who shouldn't do that to themselves, but for most healthy adults, they can get away with that for a while. And it's one of the reasons why some people actually like fasting. It doesn't appeal to me, but, you know, it is one of the things that people actually try to take advantage of as a weight loss gimmick.
Well, may I clarify or explain something?
Sure.
This happens to me rarely, but let's say two times a year, where something happens and I get sick. And I can't eat lunch. And so by the afternoon, I have a bad headache and I can't eat.
It's
that kind of.
Yeah, then that is probably more of a hypoglycemia kind of effect. If it happens that rapidly, it wouldn't hurt to just have a conversation with your physician about it and make sure that you don't have some sort of borderline diabetes or something like that going on. Because people with a diabetic tendency tend to have a higher highs and lower lows in their blood glucose levels than other people, and most of us can certainly miss a meal and not have any ill effects. But some people really get a headache, and it's very variable from person to person. It wouldn't hurt to talk to your physician about it if you're at all concerned.
And thank you very much for calling. And Sue, thank you so much.
We're out of time.
Are you going to leave me that can of Minute Maid?
I certainly will.
All right. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, comes by every so often to talk with us about nutrition issues. Pleased to have her along, and we'll have her back, and we'll talk some more. Coming up, though, we're going to take a look at climate and weather with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.